So, just before this episode of To Hull and Back, we've got a shout out to our current and only podcast sponsor, which is the FIFA Factory, run by Matt Phillip and Rich Anderson on Facebook. If you're interested to know what that is and you're a FIFA player out there, or if you're not a FIFA player and you're getting FIFA, do listen up. So, basically, it is a league format. You get a team playing 90s overall option on either Xbox or PlayStation. You get put into a messenger chat with you and everybody else who's in your league. It's up to you to arrange your games with them. You'll get your you get nine fixtures dropped, I think, a fortnight, and you just basically tag the person that you need. You'll see it on your fixture list and arrange when or if you can play. It's totally up to you guys. It's your first season is free. Your second season onwards will be £5 per season, but that includes obviously weeks of games plus cup competitions that are included in it. There are extra cup competitions that are optional. You don't have to join them, which will often be like cash prize tournaments, like the one that they've got currently at the moment, which is as follows, which is quite interesting, really. We have shared it on this. So it's £10 entry. There's a £320 prize pot. So basically, you go into a hat, it's a Champions League format game. You get eight groups of four teams. You play each other back to back. The top two go through into an eventual 16-team knockout. The winner plus the runner-up get cash prizes. The third place will go into the Europa League, which is another 8-team knockout. And then the winner of that tournament runs away with a cash prize. So this is the kind of thing, it becomes a community. You can share tips, you can help each other, you can play friendlies if you're bored or if ultimate teams annoyed you. It's a whole community. They're a great set of lads. I would very recommend at least giving it the first season for free, to see if it's for you or not. But definitely head over to FIFA Factory. We've got them on our Twitter. They're on Facebook. We've shared them. Please do give them a like. Check them out. Cheers, guys. Now then, guys, welcome back to the To Hull and Back podcast. It's going to be a positive one for a change. We like that one. City starting to see some better times. It's just me and Will again on this one. Joel's gone back into the shadows. You all right?
I am much better than I was a couple of days ago.
Yes, I think everyone is. We've got quite a bit to cover in this one, to be fair. We forgot to mention about the Fleetwood game last time. So we'll go over the Fleetwood game. We'll talk about the Blackpool game. We'll talk about today's game against Accrington, and then we'll also cover some of the transfer dealings, as well as a certain somebody re-signing on. I think we all know who we're on about. Right. So, going back to the Fleetwood game, because of the dodgy 5:30 kickoffs,
Oh.
we tend to miss the first half because of work. I have watched, I've had it recorded, so I've watched bits. I've got to watch all of the second half. I think you did as well, didn't you, Will?
Yeah, I have watched the full game back since. Thankfully, thanks to someone having an iFollow account. So I've
Yeah.
had the full been back. Christ, it
Right.
was quite a bit.
Yeah, no, it's these kickoff times are killing us. It's hard to talk about a game when you haven't sat down and fully watched it from the beginning until a bit after. You don't get the raw emotion anymore because you know what's coming up. But saying that, how would you summarize that Fleetwood game then, Will?
Well, watching it a bit later on did make the first half a lot more tolerable. I will say that. But yeah, it was not good at first. It was pretty dire, to be honest, for the most part. For a good maybe, well, the first half essentially, City just looked out of it completely. Didn't look like they had much fight in them. Just looked like they weren't as bothered to be there as Fleetwood were essentially. Fleetwood seemed really up for it. And really on it. And to be fair to them, the way they came out and started the game, he absolutely deserved to get to a two goal cushion.
Yes, I think I can agree with you there. It was another case, I think, of one of those games where we started some players that are on the fringes of the first team that seems to be popping up in near enough every episode now. We're talking about players that really should be looking at making an impact in this team, and taking any sort of first team chance when it comes round.
Yeah,
And you're
there's a
looking at
lot
the cases of James Scott and Thomas Meyer, for example, who seem to be repeat offenders. And it's frustrating because they've obviously got potential. We've seen what they can do in very brief glimpses in some games. But yeah, as you say, it was a very dull, sluggish, unenthusiastic start to the game. And yeah, we went quite rightfully two goals down, and I genuinely thought that Fleetwood were going to give us another route, to be fair, similar
Well,
to what they gave us at Burton.
it felt real bad because at half time, obviously, we brought on Keane Lewis-Potter, George Honeyman, and Malik Wilkes all in one go. And we had started playing well from the moment, pretty much from the instant they came on. And then we conceded the second goal, which was an unlucky bit of deflection. And that's when it felt like it really wasn't going to be our day because we'd started playing well and then we got hit with the sucker punch.
Yeah. I mean, Fleetwood are one of those teams, isn't it, where I think, as I've noticed this season, City, we don't tend to enjoy the more physical games, which we'll probably get onto in the Blackpool game as well. If any team fancies coming and mixing it with the physicality and giving us a bit of rough and tumble, it seems to just sort of knock us off our stride. Like, we just expect everybody to stand off us. And
Yeah.
the Fleetwood game, it was. They weren't. You could tell that it was a different Fleetwood side to what we beat in the cup, the other cup, 2-0.
Yeah. I'm sick of
They,
bloody playing him.
I know. We might even get them. What? No, we can't
We
get them again, can we?
still have to play them in the league again.
Yeah, we have to play them in the league again. Is there a chance we can draw them in? No, we're out of all the cups, aren't we, barring this one?
Well, no, we're done with the other cups now. This stats. Just one more game with them, thank God.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame Barton wasn't manager for that result, but yeah,
It would have been nice to be nice to be a bit smug in front of him. It would have been quite nice.
I'm not. Barton's
But
a bit of a
the
douche.
way it seemed like something bad went down between him and Ched Evans, didn't it? Which got them both kicked out.
Yes, I mean, he's not. I can't imagine he's the best manager to get along with, to be fair. I don't think I don't know. I think I'd probably enjoy being a player under him, but in terms of his man management, I can't see him being the
You
most
don't want to be on the
supportive.
wrong side of him, though.
No. Onto the game properly then. What are we saying in terms of, so we'll scrap the man of the matches slash worst players, because it sometimes can be a bit misleading and misinformative. So we'll go for who caught your eye? Who did you really rate their performance from that game?
Well, one person did stand above the rest of four for overall, and even before he decided to have his shot about 95 minutes in. But Louis Carroll, I thought, was fantastic, to be honest. I thought he was the best player on the pitch before he decided to score goal of the season. He had a really, he was particularly going forward, it was nice to see him sort of living up to what Emmanuel's been doing consistently, and continuing sort of the fact that our fullbacks have been pretty decent all season. I thought he pushed on really well. And I thought actually he was one of the few players who actually in the first half played okay as well for City. He was one of the ones who could come out at half time with actually any sort of positivity.
Yeah.
I thought the obvious ones are as well, and coincidentally it's the substitutions, Honeyman and Keane Lewis-Potter, the moment they came on as well, completely changed it. It was clear to see the difference when them two and Wilkes came on. I thought them two were just slightly better than Wilkes, but Wilkes had a decent game as well. Obviously, he scored. I thought Lewis-Potter and Honeyman just ran the show up front.
Yeah, we certainly sort of upped at least two or three gears when we brought the subs on, which is a bit of a concern because I think, as I've mentioned before, when you're in the running for a top two position, you really need to have a squad that's capable of filling in to anybody's shoes should they have to replace them. And like we say, in them winger positions, if it was only Scott and Meyer that we had to call upon, then we would struggle.
Thankfully, that was the last game before our transfer sort of started coming in.
Well, I mean, that's a good thing, really, because McCann's obviously seen the lack of drive or the lack of fight in our fringe players at the moment, and has quickly stepped up to, especially we're losing a Delican, we needed somebody else in that winger position who could be able to slot in. Because
I feel really bad for what I was saying about Delican now, because I think you're going to go on to it in a minute, but someone's well out surpassed him in terms of worst player so far this season. I feel really bad for what I said before now.
Yeah, well, I mean, no, well, Delican was one of them, wasn't he? He showed glimpses every now and again, but then some
that's
games.
The thing, though, at least he showed glimpses.
Yeah, yeah. I think for me, I would have to say Honeyman for the Fleetwood game, and it was literally just because he has such a lethality about his set pieces that any team we face, I can only imagine that in their pre-team meeting before matches or in training in the week before playing us, their coaching staff are saying to the lads, look, set pieces, just try not to put it out for a corner, try not to give away fouls.
He's probably the key player that I imagine a lot of managers would look at, because he runs our game.
I mean, the fact that all three goals came as a result of his corners.
Corners, yeah.
Shows you how important he is to our team. And to be fair, any successful team, whether you're trying to stay up or not, I think because we don't really have a 25, 30 goal a season striker, so we're going to have to pick up goals across the entire 11. So that's when set pieces comes in really handy, because then your defenders chip in with a few and they can get you over the line. Now, with someone like Honeyman, who's probably already on, what is it, 15, 16 assists or something ridiculous?
I know he's got eight league assists, but I don't know how many he's got in all competitions.
I know we've got, it was something like 14 or 15 set-piece goals, but obviously not all of them will have been Honeyman. He's definitely leading the league in assists.
Yeah, and then he's top of the assists, yeah.
And then if you count all competitions, he's obviously got two. No? Would he get two?
Just checking what he's got overall.
Because the first one was the third one. Coyles couldn't be in his because it was obviously deflected out. But
he's got 11 in all competitions.
I mean, yeah, that's pretty good going. So
yeah, halfway through the season. Yeah,
the fact that we've brought on them subs, we've upped the tempo, and then Honeyman doing what Honeyman does this season, and just running the show from midfield, dictating the tempo of the game, and then obviously essentially winning us the game with his quality on his set pieces. I mean, yeah, Coyle was also very good. That's a good shout. I can agree with you there. He's got a very tough job trying to dislodge Emmanuel from the starting 11. So he's only doing the right things in full-on effort every time we see him play now, yeah, which is
doing
brilliant.
Everything he possibly can, yeah, to get into the side, and
yeah,
I think I'm going to bring him up again actually in a bit as well.
Yeah, so we'll go. I mean, I think you could probably have two or three for this one, but who's your needs to be doing more or should have done more in the Fleetwood game?
Now, considering how the game was going, I thought this was going to be a tricky one to go with, but it ended up being quite easy in the end. It was quite simple, and it feels like I'm repeating myself all the time. Thomas Meyer and James Scott, they were just non-existent. Meyer was just bereft of confidence. There was a moment in the first half when Batty picked him out, and he just seemed to get his feet all confused. And I think that just summed everything up about his time recently at City.
Yeah.
And I think the least surprising thing about the game was that he went off at half-time, to be honest. And Scott was quite simple as well. he Scott was kind of at fault partly for the first goal as well. He didn't track, I think it was Wes Burns for Fleetwood, who put in the ball for Madden, and he did poorly there. And he had a good chance actually as well, but he didn't. But to be fair to Scott as well, didn't he recently have coronavirus?
I can't remember if he was one of those that did.
I think he was one of them. And to be fair, I don't think he played well, but he might still be feeling the effects of that. I'm not 100%. But even then, he still didn't have a good game.
No, yeah, I think I can agree with you. It's them. I think as a fan, when you've got wingers like that that have, I mean, with the assist that Meyer did for Wilkes' goal at Crewe, shows you he has. And some of the crosses he's put in the games he's played have looked very dangerous. He loves cutting in on the left foot and swinging a dangerous one in. He plays them. He sort of drills his crosses. He doesn't float them, and that's a nightmare for defenders. So if he can, you know, find some sort of 90-minute consistency about him from start to finish, there's a player there. And similar with Scott. I mean, I still stand by my claim that he's a
middle
striker. Yeah, I don't think he's a winger. I don't ever
look
watch
like a winger.
Jim Scott play and think he's played as a winger his entire career, because he always naturally drifts into the middle, and that's not what wingers do. That's the striker playing out of position. That's what they do. But yeah, them two, maybe with the whole Meyer thing, new country, new style. It's quite a hard league. Is the Championship?
It's League One.
It's League One.
Don't give him too much credit, Christ.
No, it's because I'm looking at the Championship table on my Football Manager now. So the words just got stuck in my head. But yeah, no, it's the English League. I mean, he's come, what is he? I'm sure he had like 14 assists last season, Meyer, for whoever played.
At the same time, while I get that, it's been quite a few weeks where we've been saying that, and it's not really changed. If anything, it's got slightly worse as it's gone on.
Yeah.
And this is, it's just.
It's confidence, isn't it? It's always confidence. Players.
I feel like with the new people coming in, he's not going to get much of a look in at all now, even in the cup games.
No. I'd be very, very surprised if he gets another good run in the team. I mean, we've got to talk about that comeback overall, I suppose.
I wanted to mention, actually, I forgot to mention him as well. Andy Smith, making his debut for us in defence. I thought he had an okay game, actually.
He did.
Debut for someone. It took him a while to get into it, but as the first half started to wear on, he sort of grew into it. And I thought he had a decent game at the end of it. And it was nice to see another young lad coming through into the side, making a debut.
Yeah, well, it's players like him who are going to benefit from
matches like that,
Departures when Device leaves.
Because
obviously we've got backup in McLaughlin Greaves, but you always need that extra one in case of injury. And he jumped straight in, and it's one of them where it was a tough game to be thrown straight into the starting 11. And yeah, like you say, he did. He played with a very, very composed head. And sort of got better as the game went along, which naturally you would probably expect. Just closing the door there, sorry. Which you'd expect from a youngster coming into the first team. The need to sort of find their feet a bit, dip the toes in it, and then fully work out where the game style. So I agree. He had a very good game. So we scored three goals. What was it in the last 20 minutes?
Last 12 minutes.
Was it the last 12?
Yeah, the first goal was in the 78th minute.
Now, you see, when I was on my way home, I had the audio commentary on. While I was at work. And then we'd locked up and I was in the car and I put my phone on the stand ready to drive home. And my goal notifications kept popping up on the screen. I just genuinely could not believe that I was missing us come back from a two-goal deficit to a win with a 95th minute Weldy. And
Oh,
I
don't
love the
worry.
fact
I
that
was watching
Louis
it and I couldn't
Coyle.
believe it.
Yeah, I mean, who better than somebody who's fighting for that first team place? He's a Hull player, scoring for his own first goal for the club as
I
well.
think he had the armband on as well, so he was captain as well.
Captain, yeah, captain
I
of your
think he
local
did.
team. And he just decides to.
Not celebrate.
Well,
I
yeah.
couldn't
I
believe.
mean,
Fair
I
play to
wouldn't
him.
agree.
That's another story as well, being the former Fleetwood man doing it to his old club. Fair play to him for
Yeah.
not celebrating such a fantastic goal.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that usually happens to us, not for us. So it was nice to see it happen the other way around for once.
Yeah.
We're from that one. Then we'll move on to Blackpool, which will probably be a slight different discussion
This
because.
will be the slight dip of the podcast. It's the only bit of negativity, I think, but
Yeah, well, I mean, not
it wasn't
necessarily
the end of
negative.
the
It
world.
wasn't. No. I think I'll start with this one. It was one of them where Blackpool, we all know how dangerous they can be because of how they beat last time.
Yeah.
So we fully expected a difficult game, but I don't think for up until the sending off that we looked really like we were going to have anything but a win.
I thought we were comfortable, definitely.
Yeah, we didn't look massively potent in attack, but we also didn't
We looked comfortable at the back,
look
yeah.
as though we would ever concede. Yeah, I didn't feel at any point in that game that Blackpool were gonna score and get themselves into it. And I think that's the kind of performance that sometimes you need to see because, as the old proverb goes, you sign a champions is a team that can play badly but still win. And I just thought it was going to be one of those games. Now, obviously, it didn't go to plan, and Smallwood made a bit of a suicide pass. Poor Becky boy
I mean,
slipped, and
fair play to Beck for taking one for the team because he did exactly what he should
yes,
have done. He did exactly the right thing.
it's an interesting one this now because it was. I noticed there was a lot saying. He should have stayed on his feet because the keeper was out at the Blackpool lad anyway. And then a few, which I agree with, saying that he was justified in doing what he was doing. What's your
Like I
stance on
say,
it?
I think he was right to do it back. He can't take the risk. He has to make sure that he stops the goal scoring opportunity there. And with us having the goal lead, I know it's only a one goal lead, we still have the advantage even if he goes off. And obviously, it turned out we lost that advantage. But I don't think the goal ended up coming from something related to the red card. It came from something we've had an issue with
No.
all season, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is to me is if I'm a player playing for Hull City at that very moment and I see Burke do that, I feel like that's what I would fully expect somebody to do. And I would have backed him for it because realistically, what was it, in the 80th minute or something?
I
78.
think so. Just bear with me.
It was late on. There wasn't long
No, there
to us
wasn't.
out. So if Beck took him down, they didn't score, and then we just defend for the last 10 minutes of the game. Even yes, we've got
It was
ten
the
men.
77th minute it happened. So there's
Yeah.
still 13 minutes left.
So we only had to spend 12, 13 minutes defending a slender 1-0 lead, which I think you should be more than capable of doing. It would have been okay. Obviously, if we'd have come away with the win, but typical City, and we just can't defend set pieces, can
No,
we?
that's what I mean. I think even though obviously Beck would have helped on a set piece, I don't think it felt like it was the way the set piece went, it felt like a goal that was just conceded even when Beck's been on the pitch.
Yeah.
And Jones came on and was okay when he came on, but again it was one of those where I don't think anyone in particular was to blame for the goal. It was just one of those as a team that was just poor.
Yeah, we've been sloppy at set
Oh yeah.
pieces all season.
As good as we've been going forward with them, we've been pretty poor at the back with them.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of zonal marking. I just
No.
don't see. I don't think I've ever seen or seen anything obvious where it works for teams, unless you're a Barcelona who's got one of the world's best back four. it doesn't really work. Just mark a man, get rid of it. Simple, basic football. It's League One. Just get rid.
Yeah, zonal marking is not a League One thing. That's...
No, it's McCann trying to be fancy, isn't it? So from that, did you have any player that stood out for you in that game? Man of the match
in the Blackpool game, I thought, you know, we're going to mention him again, but I thought Gavin White on his debut for us looked really good. And I was really impressed, and he filled me with a bit of confidence going forward with his how he was going to be for us. It felt, obviously, with losing Nedeljkovic, we needed someone out wide who could, you know, create something and do something, and it just straight away from the off, it looked like we have that player out there who can do it.
Yeah.
He had a good debut. He was definitely one to build on. And obviously, he didn't get... He drifted in and out with the game, to be fair, at times, but it was just nice. He had a key part in the goal that we did end up scoring. And I thought it was just a good debut all round and one that can be built on well. And I thought, as always, Honeyman, decent game. It's rare when he doesn't have a good game, but I thought he had a good game. He linked up well with Emmanuel and White quite a lot through the game. I thought Wilkes was okay, but was another one of those games where he had so many chances and didn't pass the ball.
Yes. Well, I've got a piece to say on Wilkes.
I don't think anyone actually had a bad game against Blackpool, to be fair. I don't think anyone actually had a bad all-round game.
No, which has been rare from the last few weeks.
So the only person I would criticise, and it's only for the one point, would be Smallwood for the pass. But he actually had a decent game apart from that pass.
Yeah, I disagree with everybody saying that Smallwood's garbage. No, I don't think I've ever once watched him play. And yes, he went under the weather a bit, but the entire team did.
He does the stuff that you don't. We have December off, the stuff we? You don't notice. Essentially, he sort of.
Yeah, he's a slightly less rugged Ian Ashby. It's just he goes about his day and he does it.
He's unfashionable
with the minimum. Yeah. But yeah, it was a poor decision. I don't know why he didn't just go straight all the way back to the keeper, or if he intended it to. I just maybe a lapse of concentration, but one moment of madness has cost us a win, which could prove quite a.
In the end, it could, yeah. I think.
It's very harsh to come out and say that he was the worst player on the pitch.
This was a game where I don't think anyone was the worst. Technically, I don't think anyone had a bad game. Really, it was a lot of okay games essentially.
I mean, I'd probably go out and say that, you know, as we've just mentioned, Wilkes's end product sometimes. He can go from like being the best player on the pitch for 10 minutes and then spend 60 minutes just running into walls of players, and it can be incredibly frustrating. But like you say, he didn't do that all game, and he took his goal well. It wasn't an easy finish. It looks it, but he had what a few players. It was two players and a keeper. He had to drill.
Yeah,
that across.
It was a good finish from him, definitely.
Well played from McGuinness to get it to him in the first place. And like we said, Gavin White's contribution was important. It was a good run down the line. It was well found. It was a good goal, to be fair. It was a very good move. Mm. I think the Blackpool game gave us the beginning signs of a turnaround in our form.
Yeah.
We started to look like we were comfortable again rather than forever.
It was a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, even with the mistake.
Yeah, because we had been playing poor for a while. We got a good result against Charlton. I mean, it wasn't as convincing a win as today's
Like I mentioned the other day, it was one of those games where I think Charlton kind of did themselves in as much as we did them in.
Yeah. So, for us to get to a point where we looked fairly comfortable against a team that had already beaten us, it was a good sign. So after that, then we'll have a break now then, and then when we come back, we'll talk about today's game, and then we'll move on to some transfers, what we've been doing, how we feel about it. And a certain young lad from Hull. See you in a minute, guys. Welcome back, guys. So we've just gone on about the Fleetwood and the Blackpool games. It's been a slightly more positive environment for City recently, and it's only going to get better. Yes. So today's game.
Yes. Well,
do you know what? I was genuinely worried about today's game well. Because I feel like Accrington were the dark horses for the top echelons of this league.
Where were they in the form table going into this match?
They were very high.
Because if you looked at points per game, recently, they would have been at least in the couple top three, I think, based on points per game, because they've had a lot of games in hand.
They've got, it's either three or four games in hand, and if they beat us both times and then got a decent result in their other game, I'm pretty sure they'd be up in the top three. So they are a team that's going to be a threat. So today's game beforehand, I was quite apprehensive about us maybe being a bit complacent because their league position's a bit false because of how many games they've played.
I was apprehensive until some news came out yesterday. And then I wasn't as apprehensive. But I was still relatively apprehensive. I thought it was gonna be a tough game, essentially.
To be fair, we can talk about that now because it'll lead into the game. So we know that now
KLP's back,
KLP has signed his new deal. He is freed.
Might have taken some blackmail. Will be worth mentioning.
Yeah, he might have done. Who caved in first there then? So what has he signed a shorter length contract? So is it he caved in himself?
It's hard to say because not much news has come out about it in terms of what has actually happened behind the scenes. But I know that his deal, I believe, is two and a, he's two. He's had a 2.5 years with an extra year that the club can add on. It has an extra year option on it. I'm not sure about wages or any of the bonuses or anything like that. But I believe it's a 2 to 2.5 year contract with an extra year,
which is perfect, really.
Which sounds like a mixture of the two. The clash seemed to be around those two things, and it sounds like it's kind of a mixture of what the two sides wanted.
Yeah.
I know we have a go at the Alums a lot. It feels like the problem was there was issues on both the Alum side and the agent, and both of them seemed to be kind of a bit at each other, not doing the best. And it felt like KLP was
the longer it went on, the more we sort of got an understanding through various social media. At first, it just seemed like McCann was refusing to play him. Then we found out that it was more Ehab telling him not to play him.
If there was one person in this story who I wouldn't blame, or two, one of them would be KLP and the other would be Grant McCann.
They've been the middlemen between two stubborn, greedy, looking to better themselves. In Ehab and KLP's agent. And so then obviously we've then come to understand that Ehab won't play him because, well, he won't start him because he has a clause where his wages increase if he starts another game. We were playing badly and our best player was on the bench because of it for what seemed like a ridiculous decision because your best player playing well should probably deserve a pay rise.
Yeah,
I
don't know how many games it was, but he has had, I think it's 9 substitute appearances this season. So most of them will have been the last, like, several games.
Yeah, I think it's the last 5 or 6, isn't it? So then, obviously that happened, and then it came out that the club had apparently given him an ultimatum and said, you sign it now or you're not playing at all. Which I think was a bit. I genuinely thought when that came out, if it was true,
I thought it
would have meant the end.
Yeah,
of
I
KLP.
Thought he wasn't going to sign when I heard that. I thought that was going to be it. He was just going to. If they don't want me, I'll go.
I thought that was a disgusting way to go about things. You don't air your dirty laundry like that.
Well, I've been saying that since the start. I think it was wrong that it ever came out in the first place the way it did.
Should always be kept in house. especially
At
something
least
as this high
they should have at
profile
least kept it in
as
house a bit more than they had, definitely.
Yeah, not details like that should be coming out, and you shouldn't be saying to the press, "Oh well, we've told him he signs or he don't play."
Yeah,
you're putting more unnecessary pressure on KLP as a result, and he's not going to have the positive response that they're looking for. Because even if he did sign because of that, it's because he was held essentially at gunpoint.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which it looks like has happened. Now, we don't know if that ultimatum thing was true. I'm not saying that it was. But he has signed his deal, which is the most important thing. And he's straight away in the starting lineup.
Yeah.
Because of that, we looked so much more dangerous today. And I don't know if it was because of the contract thing. It probably was. But the whole team played with, like, an extra bounce in the step,
God.
I thought.
I know it might be a coincidence, but it doesn't feel like it's a coincidence that the moment KLP gets free, the team plays like that.
Yes. I mean, the thing is you only have to look at the quality of the opposition. They're a very good team. We've played what is pretty much as close to our full strength as we can get. And we looked so good. That was the first time in probably since the Ipswich game where we looked like we could score six. It was amazing that it wasn't six.
It wasn't a case of looking like we should score six. We should have scored six.
We should have scored six. But I'm going to have a word about that, because I think there's a certain somebody who needs to be held to account for that. So would you agree with my premise then, Will? What was your thoughts?
Oh, best game of the season. Best performance by a mile this season so far. It was another game where, again, no one had a bad game. But no one had an okay game. Everyone had a good game. There was obviously specific players who had a really good game. But it just felt like we just felt more free going forward in attack. I thought we just looked... Having KLP on the side... I know we're going about it so much, but the side is so much better with him in it. Him and Wilkes have such a good partnership together. And him, Wilkes and White were constantly switching about at the front all the time. And it just worked so well.
I think that's what's good about the current front three of what started that game. So it was KLP, Wilkes and White. All three of them as far as I'm aware, can play in all three positions. So being able to sort of mix it up and keep your defence second guessing because you don't know who you're going to be up against defending in the next 5 minutes, I think was a very... I think that's what Grant is going for. As much stick as we give him.
Yeah, I think it is as well.
For having the 4-3-3 as his stubborn little toy pet project.
I think he wants a 4-3-3 where everyone can move about. Essentially,
yeah, this is getting to the team to a point where he's got the standard of player that fits the system that he wants us to play.
Grant McCann wants to play turtle football. Pretty much.
Yes. I mean, I'm not going to go out and say I'm his biggest fan yet, because I'm not.
I'm not. But...
I'm starting to see what he wants.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. Maybe he does need to add that bit of a variation to his tactical setup.
Yeah, he does, definitely.
Unfortunately, if plan A doesn't work, you need to have a plan to fall on, and we don't. But if plan A works as well as he expects it to, like it did today, then...
Well, I feel like because of the players he's got now, he could technically have a plan B now in the form of if he starts with these three players up front that he's currently playing, the quicker, pacier players, he has a plan B in the form of players like McGuinness.
Yeah. Who, to be fair, at one point was probably pivotal to the way we play. The way we wanted to have that sort of target man up front to give us that platform for your wingers like KLP and Wilkes to push on and get in beyond him to get them in behind. seemed to be the way that he was going about it. Now, obviously, Eves isn't, well, hasn't found his feet at this
and
club.
Now he's injured, so he's out for a while.
Yep, and now he's injured. McGuinness isn't 100% after his little fight with COVID. So maybe this sort of maybe more agile, nimble, interchangeable front three that we saw today is going to be the way we're going to play for the next few weeks,
yeah.
Which only excites me.
Right, hello guys. We had to have a little cut out there because we had some audio issues. We do apologise for any muffles that you hear in the bits before this. I have listened to it back. Are you all right, Will?
I was taking the piss then, to be honest. I was.
That's fine. So we was talking about the interchangeable front three, which leads us on to saying about the difficulty of picking out maybe a star performer from the Accrington, well, yeah, the Accrington match as a whole. If you had to pick a name out, Will, who would you pick?
Oh, it is a tough one, but for all the right reasons, I suppose. See, there's a couple who it could easily go to. I thought, going back to mentioning the attack, obviously, all of the front three, I thought, had a decent game. I thought White was okay. Not as good as he was, I think, the other day against Blackpool, but I thought he still had a decent game. And I'm saying that, and he scored, so I don't know. Exactly. But I thought he was about, it was a similar sort of level he played at. He had a good gate, kept sort of consistent. But Wilkes and Keane Lewis Potter were just on another planet, I think, compared to the rest of the team in general.
Yeah, they do tend to have a better understanding between their partnership seems to be very effective.
Yeah, they seem to know exactly. And I think the first goal epitomised that pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, because you know, carry on.
I was going to say as well, I think Coyle deserves another shout-out as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, coming into the starting 11 for a league game in place of Emmanuel. And I thought he stepped up once again. Right back is our most consistent position, I think, at the moment. No matter who plays, they have a good game.
To be fair, it's quite a big call for McCann to make that decision to put Coyle in above Emmanuel, because there isn't really any reason to drop Emmanuel. It's not a bad thing because Coyle's more than capable of stepping into it.
I think it's nice from a fitness
more
point
unexpected
of view as well.
Because, yeah, I mean, because obviously Coyle started and played the full 95 minutes against Fleetwood in the Cup. You would expect the rotation to be Emmanuel back in the starting 11.
Yeah.
But he didn't. But to be fair, Coyle's performance in that Fleetwood game probably justified a reward call up as per. So yeah, maybe kudos to McCann for making that call.
Like I said, I thought he was the best player on the pitch in the Fleetwood game, and I thought his performance was good enough to merit at least giving him a chance in the league. And it was obviously nice to give Emmanuel maybe a bit of a rest as well, considering how well he's played and how hard he plays. He probably didn't need a rest at some point anyway.
Yeah,
I mean, he came on later on and he was playing in midfield, which I thought was quite interesting to see as well.
Yeah, no, it'd be a good shout. I think it'd be a good shout to see how he plays in midfield, because he's got that physicality and that little bit of flair about him. So yeah, it might he could well be a potential fill-in if we ever needed it in midfield.
Yeah, it could be a good experiment if we could use it maybe one time.
Do you know what? It's interesting, actually. I'm going to put you on the spot here, Will. Who would you actually prefer to start in a league game between the two right backs?
Oh my god! Oh,
so just like on a whim now. So Portsmouth on the weekend. Who are you starting right back?
I can't see a reason. I fucking hate you. I can't see a reason for dropping Coyle, but I can't see a reason for not bringing Emmanuel back into the side.
Do you think that one of them has something about the game that the other doesn't?
Yeah,
so would there be an argument to play one of them in, like, maybe
Is one of them better defensively than the other? So in a more physical game where we need to be a bit more secure at the back, you'd play one. Whereas if we expect to have the majority of the ball and be attacking for 90 minutes, you'd play the other. Is there a situation like that, do you think?
I think Emmanuel's probably better going forward. I think Coyle's actually quite decent going forward as well, though. But
yeah,
I think maybe if I had to do that, I'd probably say, even though I think Emmanuel have some ridiculous, the stats are pointless, but there's a ridiculous stat about his tackling.
He's got like a 98% success rate,
yeah.
Which is the highest out of England's top four leagues.
Which is ridiculous. 98% is really stupidly high, to be honest, for any defender.
It is, considering when we signed him, Bolton fans were saying, good luck with him, he's a terrible defender. Okay going forward, but you'll leak goals for fun. And then apparently he's one of the best defenders in the country, so...
Yeah,
The setup more than the team, I suppose.
I genuinely can't answer the question, and I'm going to be honest.
No,
I'm going to be a coward, and I'm going to say no answer. But that's why
you're
I'm
happy
not a
with either.
Manager. Yeah, that's why I'm not a manager.
I mean, the thing is, personally, I think Coyle's a bit more rugged. Yes, I think Emmanuel's got a very high tackle percentage, but I think defensively, like as an all-round game, i.e., positioning, linking up with the other back four. And just being all round more solid. I think Coyle's a bit better defensively.
Yeah, I would
agree.
I think
Emmanuel's got a bit more flair going forward.
Yeah, I would completely agree. I can't pick one over the other at the moment.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, to be fair, I wasn't expecting a solid answer either way.
I do not envy Grant McCann having to pick one or the other. I really do.
Yeah, no, it's a tough game.
It's an embarrassment of riches at the moment in terms of the fullback position. I think on both sides.
Left back, to be fair, because Elder needs to be worried.
Elder and Fleming have both played well recently.
Yeah, I think Elder had a little bit of a wobble, didn't he?
Well, he was one of the lot who got COVID as well.
Yeah.
So he's had a bit of a rough time recently. But Fleming has stepped up to play fantastically.
Yeah. But this is all good things to have. Right, so anyway, right, we've gone on a tangent, haven't we? Right, so we'll go back on the signings. So we signed Gavin White, Dan Crowley, who are both...
I like the look of Dan Crowley.
I do, yeah. I thought when he came on, I think I mentioned it earlier, you could tell maybe that he's not played that many games, or, well, he's not started that many games. But when he did have the ball, he showed glimpses of what sort of technical mastery he had.
Yeah.
Very skillful on the ball. Looks like that a fully fit version of him in this league, I think, would be very, very lethal, especially with some of the players we've got to play around him, like to Wilkes and KLP.
Yeah, I like that little move where he jinxed away from two players and just tried to chip it. It's like, we don't have any players who even just try a risk like that. And it's nice to see someone in the team who's willing to sort of take a chance like that. We seem to be more trying to get the ball in the box as often as we can. No one has a go.
I think the only question mark over the Crowley signing is what is his position?
Yeah, and who would you drop?
Yeah, because apparently he's a number 10. Birmingham have operated him out wide as well. Some people suggesting he might even come in and be a striker for a bit.
Yeah, there was a suggestion of that, yeah.
So maybe he's just one of these that's literally just Mr. Versatile, and he'll play anywhere on the pitch and be effective.
It could be one of those players that I'm just on a whim just saying he could play maybe like as a false nine. And with Wilkes and KLP as the wide men. So he plays slightly deeper and then more the true forwards.
Yeah. Because if you think like how attacking we could play, you would lose the likes of, say we're going against a team where we fully expect to dominate possession and try and score goals. We could drop the likes of Smallwood and replace him with Crowley. And have a midfield of Honeyman, Doherty, Crowley, along with Wilkes, KLP and White up top, I feel like would be an absolute joy to watch. Because I think is just a midfield and attack combo that every manager in this league is going to look at and just be so envious about.
Yeah, it
And
is.
it's exciting.
It's difficult. Yeah, exactly. It's concerning because it's like, how who do you play? And like, if you drop someone, do you upset them? But at the same time, it's like we've got a bit of an at the moment based on how the Accrington game went, we might have a bit of an embarrassment at Riches. And it feels like I don't know who you would play
Well, you
because.
see, the thing is I've always my thoughts on players when you bring them in, you're looking at boosting the quality of your squad. I mean, if a
Yeah.
player isn't playing well and gets dropped and replaced with a new signing, if they spit the dummy out and say, "Well, you've replaced me," that's not the
Well,
kind of player you want at
no,
your club
no.
anyway. You want them to say, "Oh, bugger, right, I've lost my spot." And then knuckle down in training and get themselves back into that starting 11. Because to me, new signings should only boost the performance of everyone in your starting 11. Because I'm thinking, crap, I could lose my place here.
Oh, I agree.
I
It's
think.
just that I don't think anyone sort of deserves being dropped at the moment in those positions.
No, not on current form.
And based on how those players who've come on in their positions and they've played well as well, it's like, how do you accommodate it all?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, this leads us into Gavin White because we signed him and chucked him straight into the starting lineup. He looked very good against Blackpool in brief glimpses throughout the game. There was obviously he'd not played much, you could tell, but when he did really try, you
He
could
really
tell there was a
went for
player
it,
there.
yeah.
Yeah, he looked good. And then I thought the Accrington game, he looked brilliant. I thought he just. It was almost like he'd been in this team for this entire season. He's
Yeah.
just sort of got this seamless connection with the players around him already.
He was straight in there, yeah.
Yeah, he did. Like usually, you'd expect a winger to be a bit hesitant, maybe have to get the ball out wide, pass it straight away. But he was literally, he'd get the ball, he'd run at a defender. He was looking at putting the ball in early. He was putting some lovely interplay passes in together, and the enthusiasm, I think, was the selling point for me. You could tell he wanted to play well. That's what you want from loan signings, is you want a player to come in and genuinely want to play and try his hardest, not just use it as a bit of a play about for a bit, or spit
Yeah.
his dummy out because he's not playing at his proper club and they just half-arse it.
Yeah.
So I am quite happy with that Gavin White signing, considering he got quite a bit of a negative rap from the Cardiff lot as well. They were all saying he was a bit of a dead end. He was a Warnock reject who had no end product. And I think he's probably done more in his two appearances with us than what James Scott and Thomas Meyer have all season.
Yeah, I think he has, yeah. Definitely.
I mean,
Instantly.
he was pivotal to that first goal for Wilkes. It was a good run and it was a good ball. Wilkes was slightly off balance and he did well to recover to get it to Wilkes. But they're the kind of runs you want to see from your wide men is the getting in behind, because I think what we've got with Wilkes and KLP is they'll cut inside rather than hug the byline.
Yeah.
So it's a different dimension as well. Did you know anything about him then before we signed him, Gavin White?
I didn't know much about him. I knew he'd been decent when he was at Oxford at this level. I knew he'd had a decent time at Oxford, but I didn't know much about him since he'd gone to Cardiff. I knew he'd played something like 30 odd games. It cost 7 figures, I think, for him as well, but he hadn't really
Yeah,
come
wasn't
out
it a couple
for
of
him.
million he went to Cardiff for?
Yeah, I wasn't sure exactly how much it was, but I knew it was at least 7 figures. I think it was undisclosed, but it was definitely in the millions, which is, I suppose, from in League One to League Championship level, I know that's still a decent amount for a player.
No, it is, yeah, from League One level. I think
yeah,
2 million probably an average signing in the Championship.
yeah. So it was a decent get, and like I say, he'd scored 9 goals in his season with Oxford in League One. So he was getting like 1 in 5 on average. So he was a decent lad, but from out wide, that's a good record.
Yeah, and you'd only expect that now he's back down in this because it's essentially a backward step because he's gone from League One to Championship. It's not really worked out. And he's dropped back down. But sometimes you need to have that little run back in where you're comfortable. to get that confidence back up.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if we've got the option to sign him.
I would like to hope we do. I hope we do.
I think we do with both of them. I'm sure White and Crowley have both got option to buy in summer if we wanted.
It would be nice if we do, definitely.
Maybe not Sir Crowley. I'm not sure. I can't remember. I had a brief flick through Twitter. But, yeah, so we've got them two additions to an already exciting attack. With KLP back in the starting 11. McGuinness, we'll only get more match fit as the games go on.
Flores.
We've got strength in numbers.
We got
we can talk about...
Flores came on as well for his first appearance for us as well. He looked okay when he came on. He came on quite late on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the game's already... well, it was inevitable, wasn't it? So, I mean, he could have done something wrong when he didn't. So,
there's praise there. When he comes, yeah.
I think he's probably going to be the one that's going to be waiting maybe a bit longer than the others for his chance in the team, well, because he's looking at dislodging Doherty, Honeyman.
Smallwood, yeah. We came on for Smallwood.
Smallwood.
So,
it would just be... I assume he's a tactical change rather than a...
Yeah, he's more of a deeper player as well, so he's not going to have the name, the limelight in front of him as much as those other players would.
With the eye for a bit of a weldy.
I mean, it would be nice,
yeah.
Nice to have another Puskás nomination from him.
Yeah, I'd like another Corrin style midfielder. I think Giovanni.
Yeah, someone who
nice
like we were saying about Crowley. It was nice to see someone outside the box have a pop, which we hadn't had for a while.
Yeah, that's. Like, I think that's just been a characteristic of City for a while. It's very frustrating to see them ball on the edge of the box.
It's obviously, yeah, because Kyle scored one from the edge of the box, and I think obviously KLP had, I think, his first shot from outside the box ever against Swindon, and it went in.
Yeah. Because that was that solo run from the halfway line, wasn't it? That was mad, that goal.
We don't often have long range shots. It's been one of our things we haven't done for a while.
No, we try and walk it in. Grosicki was often.
Yeah, usually
he didn't fancy a long run.
If it was from like a free kick, we might have the chance. But if it was like just from open play, it would be rare.
This is good though, because there's so many players now that. You can look at our squad and you can see goals everywhere. Because even in defence, I mean, Greaves has been very unlucky with some of the chances he's had. if he put the majority of his headers away, he'd probably be on 6 to 7 goals.
He's going to get to the point where he's like played 300 games for City and he scored like 2 goals.
Yeah, but he could have scored 200.
Yeah.
He'll be one of them ones. I think he'll frustrate himself. He'll only work on that in training, I think. He only needs to defend at the moment. That's all we need from him. He's doing fine. So, right, outgoings. I think it's only Max Sheaf, isn't it?
Max Sheaf's gone out on loan, hasn't he?
So he's gone to Torquay, who I think are flying quite high. I think the conference, the Vanarama North, or the Premier, whatever it is.
One second, I'll just have a look. They're in... I believe they're in the main conference. Yeah, they are.
You see, it's one of them where you don't mind somebody like Sheaf, because I don't think he's really in contention for any first team football.
No, not at the
and
moment.
I personally would rather them. I would rather them go on loan to a league like that and get some lower league football experience rather than playing our under 23s.
What do you think about Chadwick being gone for a couple of games at Halifax and coming back already? Because it seemed like
I think he's done it.
We recalled him, and it seemed weird that we recalled him. Now we've brought in all these other players. Do you think we brought him back just in case we couldn't get anyone in?
Yeah, I would imagine so. There might be an agreement between us that. If we're happy with what we've done in January, he might be able to go back before the end. Yeah,
because we've got these other players in. I can't see him staying for the rest of January. I think he'll go back on one loan.
No, I fully expected him to be in the squad above McGuinness, just while obviously McGuinness got his fitness back and his sharpness.
Yeah.
Because it does seem weird that we would prefer a, what, maybe 65% match sharp Josh McGuinness or the in-form scoring Billy Chadwick. There's absolutely no harm in giving him a chance in the first
Yeah,
team.
especially when we were 3-0 up, maybe. I thought 2-0 up, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, McGuinness scored, but with his, what was it? His first touch on it as a
It was
penalty.
technically, I think, his first
So,
touch, yeah.
but.
Yeah, because he came on, we took the corner, we took, sorry, we took the free kick and we got a penalty from it.
Yeah. So maybe he's a bit confused, but I'm hoping that they've got an agreement that he can go back because I think it was good that he was getting his goal scoring touch about him because it can only benefit their development and then obviously our long term future.
Yeah, because I mean,
But yeah, that's a good call. That is a quite confusing recall if he wasn't planning on using him in the squad. It's just, I think,
I can only think it was a precaution in case we couldn't get in some certain players. Like, I think maybe if
yeah,
we
enough
get in
space.
someone else, maybe because he's obviously Grant's looking at another attacker still. I think if he gets that other attacker in, he'll go back out definitely.
Yeah, because I think, right, so the two names that I've seen rumoured are Kyle Joseph from Wigan, who, from a quick Wikipedia stint, the old reliable wiki, he's literally only broken through into the first team this season for Wigan. So he's got,
19-year-old.
think it was 22 appearances, he's 19. But he has represented Scotland at under 18 and 19
And he's
level.
got 5-12. To be fair, which is a decent record. Someone just broken in. Six,
Yeah,
he's.
apparently he's very, very highly rated. There's a few Premier League teams watching his development. Someone was saying £1 million. I very much doubt that we'd spend
No,
a
it
million
wouldn't be
pound at
us, no,
the
then, if that's the case.
moment. So maybe we've, because apparently we've had a bid rejected, haven't we? But they've not named who it is.
Yeah.
So Ehab might have offered 10p
I'd
and a bag of Monster Munch,
take that.
and they've said no. Yeah. But he fits the bill in terms of what we're trying to do in our current transfer policy, where we sign
Yeah,
youngsters
build them
with
up,
large
yeah.
potential and, from Ehab's perspective, large sell-on value.
Yeah.
So he's been mentioned along with Preston's Jaden Stockley, who is one of those names I've seen about for a while. Not really in a positive sense. So I went and had a look, and his goal record is 9 goals in 64 appearances for Preston.
Oof.
So as a striker, do we really want to be signing? I don't
I mean,
know.
that's at championship
And the
level.
one
That is at
thing.
championship level with Preston. And when you look, I've had a look as myself, and I know it's the level below, but at League Two level, he was a goal machine, to be fair, for Exeter City.
Yeah, he got 41 in 76 for
Yeah.
Exeter,
So
which is very
it could be
impressive.
that the championship's maybe too high a level for him. And if he we do he's not known what it'd be like in League One, essentially.
He's actually got a very good goal scoring record for Exeter. He's been on loan to them before. He played 22 appearances, scored 10, then went to Aberdeen, then went back to Exeter and scored 41 in 76. So he's got 51 goals in 98 games.
Exactly. So he has got a good record at League Two level, at least. The Championship level's not great, but again, maybe it's just maybe a bridge too far from the Championship, and it's to be seen what it'd be like at League One level. I think it'd be a
Yeah,
risk.
he's been
It'd be a
around a bit.
risk, but I don't think it. Depending on how much it would be, it might not be too big a risk.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the teams that he's been with, and I'm thinking that majority of them will probably have been in League One. I mean, they're all on loan. The majority, he's one of these who looks like he's been loaned out for the
Right,
majority of his career. So
so
he was at Bournemouth
I'm just having a look.
from 2009 to 16.
Yeah, he barely played for him. He was a young lad there.
16 games.
He had 22 appearances across those 7 years, so he didn't play for him pretty much at all. Spent a lot of that time out on loan.
No, but he's been to Dorchester, Accrington, Woking, Leyton Orient, Torquay, Cambridge, Luton, Portsmouth, Exeter, Aberdeen, Exeter, and then now where he is at Preston. So you'd assume that Portsmouth, Luton, Accrington maybe were League One level.
I think they were League Two. Again. Yeah, top.
Yeah, a few of them teams have been yo-yos.
But again, it's one of those where it's a risk, but I don't think it's like an immense risk depending on how much it would be.
It'd just be frustrating if we did
another one and it, yeah,
signing where it's a striker that doesn't seem to score, because we've got definitely one in Tom Eads. McGuinness has turned a bit of a corner this season, but I don't think we'll see a fully fit and roaring McGuinness for a few weeks yet. So to sign another striker who could potentially just be another player to try and get rid of at some point, which I think would be a bad idea. But then again, what strikers are available out there that you're not costing? I mean, strikers are costing you an absolute premium.
They're always horrendous to get a hold of a decent one at a decent price.
And as a League One team, you're not going to
the bank.
You're not going to spend that kind of money. You've got to be able to pluck that unfound gem from like a League Two or a Conference team who costs you next to nothing but turns out to be absolutely amazing. Or through a youth academy, we could have one in Billy Chadwick.
Exactly, but we'll have to give it another go.
I mean, would you play Keane Lewis Potter through the middle, maybe?
I'd be tempted. I think, going back to the Accrington,
I'm sure is it. What wasn't it his original position, a striker anyway?
I would have always. I'm amazed we've not tried him as a central man, to be honest.
I mean, I like him coming in from the left. I do think he's very good.
Because when Bowen and he started playing through the middle when Bowen and Grzycki were here, he was playing as he was brought on. He'd be coming on as a sub as the middle man.
Yeah, I am 99% sure that when he was in the academy, he was a striker.
He was.
And we've sort of conveyed him to a left forward.
No, he absolutely was, definitely. At least he had played at the front, definitely.
I mean, we're talking about this like these are all problems.
No, it's funny because like none of this is, all this is good.
Yeah, none of this is an issue.
No, there is.
We're sorry if it comes across like we're talking about it like it's an issue, by the way, guys. We don't mean
there
it.
Is one more transfer that hasn't happened yet, but it's looking inevitable, and I think that's Martin Samuelsson going back to Norway.
Yes, good call, actually. I forgot about him.
It looks...
Which I think maybe probably echoes my thoughts on him potentially leaving.
I mean, I'm...
I just don't think it's worked for him,
no,
has it?
I'm a little bit disappointed because I kind of liked what I'd seen from him, but it's never really worked out and he's never really had as many chances as I thought he maybe would have had. But I suppose he's probably, with the players we've brought in, he's going to have even less of a chance to get through into the team. And I think...
Yeah, Samuelsson was one of them rare few players that, as a youngster, I'd heard about and I'd seen play for West Ham. And when we signed him permanently, I thought that was an absolute steal. Now, I don't know whether the fact that he pretty much got injured as soon as we signed him and then the current coronavirus epidemic happened, and it's just sort of hampered his ability to maybe hit the ground running with us, and he's just hit some sort of a stumbling block and then lost his confidence. But when he plays and when he plays well, his ability on the ball is fantastic. And I do think if we lose him, it'll be one of them where we could look back on and think he never reached the heights that we expected him to.
Nah, yeah. I mean, I don't blame him if he goes back to Norway. I mean, one of the clubs that's after him is his hometown club. So I would fully expect him to go back. I don't blame him to go back, because he'd probably get first team definitely over there.
Yeah, I wouldn't be bothered either way. If he stays, brilliant, because it gives him the opportunity to eventually find his form. If he leaves, fair play. He has had quite a few opportunities and not really taken them, barring the Grimsby game. I think it'll just be a frustrating one that we'll look back on in 2 or 3 years' time when he scored 15 goals for his new team and we've gone, well, why didn't he do that for us? But we always have that with players.
Yeah.
We always sign a player with huge potential or has been a proven goal scorer and then Can't score with us. Do you remember Aaron
Oh
McLean?
my God.
Him and Craig McHale Smith at Brighton were like one of the no,
It
was
was
it Peterborough?
Peterborough. It was
Peterborough,
Peterborough,
wasn't
yeah.
it? One of the most lethal strike partnerships in the country. They both had like 60, 70 goals between them. we signed him and he just sort of
Yeah,
limped over the line with us alongside
McHale Smith
Fryett.
went to Brighton and he actually was still scoring, but Aaron McLean just stopped scoring when he joined us.
Yeah, the City curse. I'm trying to think if we've had any other strikers.
It's funny
Jersey
because I actually
Altidore.
liked McLean as well, even though he was useless in front of goal. I actually did like him.
Yeah. Gives me an idea for some featured episodes. To be fair, we could look back at some different positions and
Shite strikers.
record it. Shit strikers. Yes. Yes. I'm going to tweet out and ask anybody if they want that kind of episode. The worst. We'll do a City's worst 11. I think that'd be a good idea.
I think we'd have to do it of our time watching it because there's probably a lot of dross from while we watched it.
Yeah, from 2005 onwards, would we say?
Yeah.
15 years. Yeah. That's a good idea. Right, so I think that's all the transfer goss that we've got so far. I think we've tried to do all our business quite early, so I can't imagine there'd be much
more
happen.
Yeah, I think we've tried to get out of
maybe
the way.
A couple more bids. Yeah, I think maybe a bid or two for another striker, maybe test the
water.
Yeah,
I think for the rest of the transfer window, we're more likely to see outgoings and incomings.
Yeah. Well, who would you say would go then?
Well, Samuelson. I do think that Chadwick will go back out on loan. And you could see someone like James Berry, maybe, or Harvey Cartwright, one of the other young lads who doesn't really play, maybe go out on loan as well.
Yeah. So it'd just be loans and possibly Samuelson leaving on a permanent. I can't see. Maybe we'll receive a couple of test the water bids from some championship clubs for honeymoon.
Maybe, yeah. Hopefully
not.
Just deny them.
And then KLP's new contract sign will void off any of their potential bids, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, do you know what we haven't done? Which would be quite difficult. Our much to be desired player from the Accrington
None.
Game.
There you go.
None. No, do you know what? No. You see, I'm going to say this because
you didn't
it's
have
weird.
A chance to do this before, and you can have it now.
No, I didn't. No, it's only just clicked now when I've been looking at all the players in the team.
End it with the rant. End the podcast with the rant.
It's not a rant. It's just a. It's because he's brilliant, and it's more of a. It's a frustration. So Malik Wilkes is fantastic, isn't he? He's our top scorer, so it's weird that we complain that you can find any sort of negative to say about him. He's our top scorer. He's only 21 year old. He's got huge potential. But I think the only reason that that game wasn't more than three goals was because of Malik Wilkes. Yes, he scored the first goal. Gavin White's goal was it should have been passed to him in the first
Wilkes
place.
Wilkes
anyway.
Either should have scored it or passed it. He shouldn't have missed that chance.
Yes, and he put it. The thing is McGuinness was getting so mad with him. There's a few people suggesting that he might actually have a bit of a rift with McGuinness, which I think is just someone playing fancy paddle there online. But because I think there's an Instagram poster, but I think Kevin Stewart commented about he replied to City's tweet about McGuinness scoring the penalty, and Kevin Stewart replies and says, "Oh, Wilkes, you better not have been on the pitch for this or summer." And then he referred to McGuinness as being a big baby. But every time, the last couple of games, McGuinness has been having a go at Wilkes for not passing the ball. And you can tell that McGuinness, more than anybody, gets visibly frustrated with it. The fans get visibly frustrated with it. And I just think that the only reason we've got Malik Wilkes at League One level is because he isn't reaching that aspect of his game to the highest potential that he can. Like, if he fully switched on and passed when he needed to pass and shot when he needed to shot, he'd be the best player in this league. He'd be untouchable, and we'd lose him in summer to the Premier League.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's just he. I think there's so many more games this season. Maybe when you look back at it as well, that the games where we've had so many, well, we've got into good positions and not scored, and it's just because in the final third we often make the wrong decision. Maybe it's the youngness of the side and that naivety, or maybe Wilkes has a bit of an ego because he is a bit of a showboat, isn't he? He's a bit of a maverick. But the only quarrel I have with Wilkes is that he just needs
just
to pass.
Just once or twice.
that's literally the. I know I've dragged that on a bit, but he just needs to pass the ball. In some better positions in that game, we'd have put 6 or 7 past them if he'd have just put his head up and made the right decision. And I think it's so difficult to say something like that when you've just won 3-0 and the guy scored and he's our top scorer. And I will open myself up to any tweets if you want to have a go at me. I'm not bothered. I just feel like it's good, but it could be better. That's all I'm saying. I'm asking a lot, but he just needs to pass. It's not really asking that much, is
it? I think
it?
when you're winning 3-0, you can get away with it. It's just when he even do it. Yeah.
You can, but you can just imagine that if it's that kind of game and we'd only been 1-0 up and he makes the wrong decision, we don't score, and then it's a Blackpool situation, you've lost 2 points. So it's just, it all comes down to them. Yes, it's all right when you're winning 3-0, but in the grand scheme of the season, you need to be able to have that intelligence about you to put games to bed, which I think's been an issue for us this season, is putting mm-hmm. games to bed. We can't kill a game off. Even if we win 1 or 2-0, the other team are in it and they're dangerous. On the odd, obviously you've had your Accrington Ipswich games where we've just put it out of sight, but there's so many games where we've had 20 odd shots or something, and we it could have been that all the time. And it feels like we're on the cusp of something absolutely amazing, but yeah. We're getting there, and it's very good. We're back top of the table. So we're top of the league. I know Portsmouth have got 2 games in hand on us. Lincoln have got 1 game, but we've got to play them.
We
will.
Our next game is Portsmouth.
Yeah, so it's Portsmouth on Saturday, Accrington again on Tuesday. And then I can't remember after that. The schedule just gets a bit weird because there's too many rearrangements.
Yeah. So it's going to be a bit of a make or break few days for City, I think, possibly. It might define the season when we come back to look at.
It's a big month. It's a very big month. I think if we come out of this month and we're in the top two, I would assume we would then go on to stay in the top
right,
two.
Right, yeah. I can't disagree with that. It's hard to...
No, and that's some rare optimism from me. I've been beaten down the last few years.
I think that's the best place to win this one, then, on rare optimism.
Yeah, rare optimism. Like I said, we're always open for anybody to tweet us if you've got your own thoughts on anything we've said. If you've got any suggestions about what you want us to talk about in future episodes, just give any of us a bell. Our Twitter handles are always on the official account. We often retweet the official one, so you'll see us out and about on Twitter, I'm sure. I think me, you and Joel are fairly prolific City tweeters. we try and keep the tags on the end as well. So, cheers for joining us again.
It's been a long one this time, but thoroughly worth it this week.
But it's been a good one.
Yeah,
it's a long one, but it was a happy one. We like happy ones. That's where we want to stay. So, yeah, thanks for joining me, Will, and thanks for listening, everybody, again, guys, and keep an eye out for the episode being posted. We'll get Joel right on it.